you up, but I can't jack you down.
I can jack one way, but I can't Charles Jack.
You get it. You get it. Chaka, 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 chaka. Cool.
Cool.
Why don't you introduce us to the people, Chris?
Hello. Welcome to the Cat and Cloud Coffee Podcast. I promise we won't do that again. This is Chris Baca and Jared Truby. And we got a Q&A coming at you.
That's a question and answer.
Flipping it up, hot off the heels of the two-part Tonks interview, which I hope you guys loved. And we got really good feedback on it. We weren't sure if people were going to love the history, but they do love the history, as it turns out.
There's still so much more out there.
There's so much more out there. There's a lot of inside jokes in there, and I think people really enjoyed them, despite them maybe not knowing everything about them.
They're all, that's funny, I don't get it, but I like it.
Yeah, and since you said you like it, I have to say, the Cat Cloud Podcast is brought to you by Calafia and their tasty beverages.
Hot.
We like that.
We do like that. It's been creamy. It's been delicious. We've been using it to pop up every week. And I just tried some very, very high-end cold brewed coffee by them as well. Central American and Colombian coffees in my body.
I might have some almond milk in the fridge, but I'm not making any promises. Maybe I'll drink some on air so you can just feel how it goes down.
I for sure have that toasted coconut in my fridge. And it's fantastic. My daughters love it.
Tea to the C.
So yeah, let's jump into some podcast questions. How about that?
Let's do it.
All right. So I have this first one. It's kind of fun. And we talked a little bit about Anthony Bourdain the other day, and somebody else wrote in. So I'm just going to get into it with this, and it's going to be funny.
Yeah, we got our wires crossed because Jared and I were actually talking about two different emails because we had two separate people write in about the Bourdain coffee thing. So
we addressed Chris's on the previous episode. We're going to address the one that I got on this episode, and I'm going to bust it out. Okay, this dude read Bon Appetit, Anthony Bourdain interview, like some of y'all did. He says, I wonder how long it will take for people to start spouting off about his, Anthony Bourdain's, comments regarding his coffee strategy on the road. And his man bun comment gave me a horrible image of Jared, that's me, donning a man bun. Yikes.
Yo.
Dude, I'd be like full Seagal.
Bad news.
Anyway, speaking of things that need to go, condom tip beanie hats and hipster used when referencing specialty coffee. We agree. Do I leave a coffee shop when this is the scene? Sometimes. Do I leave when it's quote unquote hipster dominated and K-pop or terrible music? Up to 10.
What's K-pop?
I don't know.
Cool.
Probably sounds like this. I'm pretty sure that's it.
Yeah.
That's probably it. Absolutely, he leaves. But besides, weren't progressive quote unquote hip quote unquote people always gathering in coffee shops from day one? Defending specialty is very difficult when the hipster is automatically tied to the experience. Yes, consider the messenger, but that attitude paired with coffee and its affiliation with hipster does nothing for our industry, at least when we are trying to appeal to a wider audience. Yeah, that's a statement and a question. And for me, I just go straight to it. A lot of people in our industry are, well, first of all, our industry is so young. And I have this thing that my theory is that people are trying to fit in and they look to whoever is quote unquote cool at the time and they try to be like them. And this is pretty standard in all walks of life. Our industry comes from a place where everybody tried to look kind of, I don't know, atypical at the time. And it's derived from that originally. And it's people who are trying to be themselves, but ultimately in somebody trying to be themselves, they created a whole other subculture of followers. And I've always had an issue with that. And I think we're still trying to find our own identities in our own coffee shops. And that's led to a lot of people saying, this is what you have to look like and be to be a barista. And I think Chris and I are both actually, we don't fall into that category.
No, we're definitely not the typical hipster or slash hipster at all.
Yeah. And I
mean, if you're looking for a couple of California dreamboats, you found them. I tell you one thing.
You did.
So welcome really to Surf did. City.
I shaved today, so you got to get a look at this. And I'm not talking my face.
You probably think because of this beard that I'm really hairy.
Shaved. Her name is Christina. Anyway, I have issues with the stereotype, but unfortunately, the stereotype is there because we made it. So we all made our bed, and we need more people to stop laying in it.
Yeah, and it's going to change because what's going to happen, and the last question addressed some of the same things, and I was like, dude, like, what's up, dude? What's up with hipsters? Like, forget about it. But in reality, what's going to happen is specialty coffee is going to replace normal coffee more and more and more and more. So let's say 2 out of 10 people drink high-end specialty coffee, and the rest of them go to, you know, whatever, coffee shop X or a big chain store, just someone who doesn't care about quality. As the industry becomes like more of like a, I don't know, people are going to be more culturally aware that they can drink better coffee.
Right.
There's going to be more quote unquote normal, I don't even know what that means,
right,
non-hipster people going to find specialty coffee. And I think that little model will change, but it's going to take a while.
Yeah, it's going to take a while. It's going to take good service. And it's also going to, I mean, when I was young, getting tattoos was like still not openly accepted. And nowadays, more professionals than not are tattooed. Like the times are just changing. And we're going through those growing pains as in industry. But I think it's time for us to just treat people really nice and to start thinking about what we're serving and not thinking about what we need to look like serving it.
Well, and it comes back to, you know, every business kind of curates their customer base in a way. So if you're creating an environment that only people who are uber cool feel comfortable being in, then that's your model. That's fine. But don't be surprised when not everybody likes your coffee shop. But if you can create an environment where, you know, the mom with the stroller feels good about
right.
going in, like the weird tech geek feels good about going in, the hipster can be there and the surfer dude.
The businessman.
Yeah. I like
or
that.
Woman.
I like that. Mix it up. Create an environment where people feel comfortable. And if enough people do that, then people will stop associating specialty coffee with just hipsters.
Right. That's actually a really good point.
I think, check that out.
I think something that might be wise that I think about a lot is stop trying to impress the industry leaders and your industry peers and start trying to impress your guests and your local customer base. And that'll be the beginning of your success.
Sure.
All right. Cool.
Yeah,
gosh.
On to the next.
All right. So, this gent gives us. Actually, I don't know if it's a gent, so I apologize. That was very insensitive of me.
You're a jerk.
This friend of ours, he wrote in, said a lot of nice things, and he said he wants to get our opinions on cold brew coffee, brew ratios, materials, filtration protocols, anything that we'd like to share. A lot of cold brew companies that he or she sees. They went to a certain coffee event. They're pretty broad and vague on purpose, but they tasted stale, flatty, and just gross cold brew coffee. Worst of all, these companies are all planning to bottle it up and put it up for distribution. And they don't know if high pressure pasteurization will solve the staling and fermentation issues in cold brew, but nobody's really nailing it yet. And this person also lives outside of the US. So he says, and nobody in my country is as well. The person was so confident in their product that they were selling to me that I had to just keep nodding until I could walk away and throw away my cold brew. In my own small operation, I treat cold brew like an artisan yogurt and sliced fruit. They have to be served immediately after making, and in the time where we're waiting, we have to consistently re-vacuum seal the vessel it's in with food saver after every time it's open. To be honest, I end up throwing away tons of cold brew at times because it doesn't sell. And it's a major hit to my sales, but it's what I need to do to keep my coffee quality high. And it's still all good. So
it's all good.
It's all good. Here's my straight up. The word cold brew irks me because I affiliate cold brew with gross coffee.
Me too.
I despise cold brew. And when I say that, I despise so far the cold brew that sits overnight or sits for like 5 hours in a vat of a bunch of coffee and this, that, and the other. And it almost, not even almost, it always tastes gross. It always is something that I have to put cream and sugar into just to enjoy. And that's why I never get it, because I don't always want cream and sugar in my coffee. I could probably just put cream in there and get away with it. But it's always just whack, dude. It tastes like, it all either tastes the same or it all tastes sour.
It's either sour or really flat or just it's really like, mundane. I don't like, okay, just like everyone's going to hate on me for this.
Because it matters.
I don't actually like cold coffee that much.
Yeah, I don't love it either.
You know, it's not my favorite beverage, and I'm hesitant to say that because I know that the cold brew
revolution.
Slash cold market, like cold coffee market is... Oh, that one's weird over there. Sorry. Jared just jumped up on a weird part of my counter that I had already previously broke.
I won't do that.
I know it's really hot right now, and it's something that the normal customer can kind of connect with because they see it everywhere. You know, they see their... cold brewed coffee at Whole Foods or whatever grocery store, and you got the blue bottle and the Stumptown and all that stuff. But so, yeah, but I'm going to go ahead and hate anyway. Most of it tastes really, really bad. Most of it tastes really, really bad.
And one-liners. Then, no complexity.
Yeah. So we're... Well, two things. We're not going to do cold brewed coffee.
Sorry.
We're going to have iced coffee, but we're going to brew it hot.
We are going to brew it hot, and I think that's going to get a lot more nuance out of it.
Yeah, and there's a, you know, if anybody's listening to this, it's probably not news to you, but there's a few different things that affect coffee and coffee extraction, and a big... Oh man.
Chris just got distracted. Somebody walked by the window looking like like they were just in the Jackass movie.
We're up. I'm on the second floor here and I get a great view of Santa Cruz and all the random people who may happen to be in my
Someone just
lot.
Walked rolled through with some real short shorts and a nice polar pacer on him. that monitors your heart rate.
It was looking hot. So think about that for a second.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a bunch of different things that affect extraction, and temperature is one of them. And I think coffee that's brewed with heat has more character. It has just more flavor, to use a generic word. It's got more complexity. It's got more nuance.
It's got more of the things that we want out of our coffee.
So for us, figuring out a brew ratio that we can brew hot using heat to extract all that goodness and then getting it over ice and serving it, you know, that day, just like any other cup of coffee, and not having it sit, like you said, in the fridge for like 5 days or whatever people do.
Right.
Because it's just like, yeah, maybe it technically keeps longer if you cold brew it, but that doesn't mean it tastes good.
Yeah, and arguably, I don't think it doesn't keep longer. It gets bad within hours of being brewed. I mean, I've tried it. I keep trying to I actually want to like it, but I can't. I've tried.
I feel you.
I've had like one cold brew experience that I felt like was worth it, including all those nitro cold brews that are just like on tap in everybody's cafe. I have only had one that I was like, yeah, this is pretty good. But it wasn't even good enough that I wanted to have it again.
Right. It's the pickle to where it's like, okay, there's this hot market, so I want to be a part of it. So do I, A, just ignore the market because I'm not ready, I don't have a product that's awesome, or B, can I tap into that market, make a little bit of money by putting a product out there that's like subpar, really, but I know people will still eat it up. Or, you know, it's a conundrum right there.
Well, it's even
worse. I get what people are going.
Yeah. I mean, for me, I'm like not trying to drink that much coffee in the day either. So what am I going to do? Sacrifice my delicious hot coffees in the morning for my 12 to 16 ounces of cold brew?
Not me.
And also, cold brew coffee most of the time warms up before you finish it anyway. It's like all around, especially the nitro. You don't put nitro on ice. So you get this 16 to 12 to whatever ounces of nitro coffee. And you're like, I've had 4 or 5 ounces and I'm kind of done. Now I've got lukewarm, weird stuff that wasn't even that amazing to begin with that I have to somehow finish. And I also probably paid more for it than I did for my normal coffees. It's just the weirdest model ever. And they're going to hate, but I think it's a full on gimmick.
Yeah. No, I agree with you. And there's the cold brews that I do like are kind of concoctions, or the cold coffees that I do like are more of like sweet treats than anything else.
That's
like
what
the, it's like,
meant to be,
I like the blue bottle, like yeah. The Nola, the New Orleans, and the carton. I can get down with it, but it's not really coffee. It's candy. And yeah. I'm fine with that if I'm in that mood.
That's what it should be.
Right. It's like a sweet, delicious, like it's like a melted Frappuccino in a carton.
Yeah.
Which is chill. But to answer your question, and he's asking, you know, how do you brew? What filtration do you use?
Yeah, let's answer his
question. It's really not going to be any different than brewing regular coffee. You've got the same things that affect it. You've got, you know, your grind setting or your particle size. You've got how long you're brewing for, and you've got your temperature, your water, agitation.
Yeah.
And you just need to figure out the magic window. And really, if you're doing the same thing every time and some batches bomb and some don't, you've got a little ghost in the machine somewhere. There's something that you're not seeing.
Yeah, I mean, okay, so... And I'll just get weird and throw out a generalized idea of where I would start based on us not even being open yet. We typically brew coffee at a 1 to 16 and a half ratio for us. We like that. In something like iced coffee where I know we're going to dilute it, I might brew it at a 1 to 15 ratio knowing that ice is going to go in there and dilute it further. But I don't know yet. And it might not be the right answer for us yet. But that's like a starting place where I would try it. And then I'd say, hey, is this working? Is this good? And then I'm gonna mess with it from there. And it's going to be really fun to do because I think that Chris and I and Charles are going to come up with cold coffee that tastes fantastic and tastes how we want it to taste.
No doubt.
Another thing is people, I think, use way too light roasted coffee when they're doing this, and they ruin it in that way as well.
It's all
like, cool, no body, and it tastes like nothing with acid mixed in. And they're it's less acidic coffee, and that's their pitch, too.
Oh, yeah, because it's toddy or
whatever. Yeah, because it's toddy. There's less acidity in it.
No,
dude. And it's not going to hurt your stomach.
No, dude.
So what if it doesn't hurt your stomach? It tastes like poop and still tastes acidic.
You're all, eat this poop. It doesn't hurt your stomach because it came out of your stomach.
Put the poop directly back in your stomach.
Put the poop back in. It's like a perpetual motion for nourishment of your body. Well, anyway, we're going to move along from that one.
Yeah, sorry, bro. To answer your question, we're going to brew it through a batch brewer, and then we're going to put ice in it. Super dick answer, but it's true.
No, that's real. No, that's so real.
No, okay.
This is so boring.
This
is why that's not a jerky answer, is because the focus for us is going to be on how it tastes. And whatever is going to make it taste the best way, and for us in all of our testing, that's been the best cold coffee so far. So that's what we're going to do. And I think people need to know that they have that freedom, that people don't need like a slow drip Japanese like crazy thing, because there's this pressure to have that. Or you have to do toddy because that's how you make cold brew. So I think it's important that you say stuff like that. It's real, dude.
It is so real. I believe in it. It's just the funniest answer.
Yeah.
It's like when people hit you up to ask for some crazy wisdom insight, and you're all, yeah, you put 20 grams of coffee in.
Right.
And then you pull it at a 1-2.5-ish ratio, or depending, you know, for that light coffee. And then you're done. And they're like, what? I'm like, yeah, that's it.
Right.
Like, but it's got to be harder than that.
Yeah, but what else did you do?
Yeah.
You're all like, you know, I
just trained my palate to find out where it tastes the best.
I tamped it. I tamped it with nice pressure.
Sorry, not sorry.
Was it 32 pounds of pressure?
I did actually 15 and a half. I weigh out my pressure.
Bathroom scale every time. All right, y'all, the Cat and Cloud podcast is brought to you by the wonderful folks at Calafia Farms. If you don't know Calafia, you better check yourself before you wreck yourself.
Mm.
They make non-dairy milk alternatives, almond milk, coconut milk, and the like. And if you haven't checked it out, they have a bunch of different cold brew options that are RTD. That's ready to drink. You can just wake up 6 a.m., pop the top, and put them in your face.
They're made with Central American coffees and Colombian coffees. They're hop fire. And they are good for you. And if you can't handle that milk, they're your answer. And they're America's answer. Is that right, Chris?
Yep. They did it for us. They did it for America. And they're doing it for you. We love those guys. They're just all around good human beings. So check it out. We're going to get back to the show. Which one are we going for here? You want to do there?
Yeah, start it off. Read it out, Chris.
All right. This is my favorite one.
Quanto.
How much does an espresso brew recipe have to do with how the coffee is roasted? Are certain coffees roasted to taste better at larger brew ratios? That's the first part. Two, how does basket size affect your recipe? We use 20 gram VST baskets. Three, how does pre-infusion affect your recipe or ramp up / ramp down? This is freaking awesome. These are some features that we have on our machine, but don't really understand what they do. Right now, my dial-in process has been to show up an hour before I'm supposed to, pull the shots to the previous spec, and then play around with stuff until it tastes good. What's awesome is I'm seeing improvements overall, and I really love the process of getting coffee to taste good and stay dialed in, especially when the customers are stoked. Heck yeah, bruh! It would be nice to get to the point where the guessing and playing turns into knowledge, so getting dialed in was always the exact intention and not just a falling upon. Keep up the great work, guys. So, you're talking about espresso, so you're talking our language. This is
the
bomb. Let's just freaking go one through three. How much does an espresso brew ratio have to do with how the coffee is roasted? Everything.
All of it.
A lot.
Yeah.
A lot. And it's hard to illustrate without, you know, being there, but we'll just say generally, the lighter the coffee is roasted, the longer your extraction is going to be, like the more open your brew ratio is going to be.
Yeah.
Because you kind of need that extra volume. Lighter roasted coffee is going to be less soluble in water.
Yeah, you need more time and more water.
So to get more out of it, you're going to need to give it more quote-unquote attention.
Yes.
And if you pull a light roasted coffee too short, don't run enough water through it, it's going to be sour. It's going to be overly acidic. It's not going to have a developed sweetness, and it's certainly not going to be balanced. So if you have that hyper light and you're trying to pull it ristretto, you will get the face changer tang bomb for sure.
And a lot of people feel like they need to pull coffee that short because they are under the misconception that the body needs to stay the same way. So they're thinking about body first and not the balance of the overall flavors in the coffee.
Mm,
and so they're like,
I see you.
They start not liking lighter roasted espressos because they don't have enough body. And like, I understand that, but that doesn't mean that you should be pulling these light roasted coffees super short, because you're still ruining the overall experience of flavor.
Right. You just have to accept what it is. Like, if it's a light roasted coffee and you need to go with an aggressive brew ratio to get flavor out of it, it's going to have lighter body, and that's okay.
Yeah.
That's just a byproduct of what it is.
Yep.
And conversely, you know, the darker your coffee's roasted, the more easily soluble it is. So it requires less water and less time going through there to pull out some flavor. So that's why, rewind to, you know, 2004, 2005, like kind of the beginning of the third wave movement, is you see a lot of ristretto short shots. The roasts were a lot darker overall then, so we didn't need to have, I mean, if you saw something that was over 30 grams, which we didn't even have used grams back then, it was all in ounces, but it was not uncommon to see like 1.5 ounce doubles.
Yeah, like 17, 18 grams.
Like 20 in, 20 out. Double ristretto at like 22 seconds. That would
20 club.
That is not an uncommon thing. So yeah, play with that. And then what's the right one? Well, the right one is the one that you like the best. We're going to have both. So we're going to have something that's a little bit more developed that we can put in milk drinks that'll be really chocolatey and caramely, and we'll pull it a little bit smaller, but we'll also have a single origin offering. It's a little bit lighter roasted.
Yeah.
That will be pumping a little more water through. It'll just be a different experience.
Different experience.
So
hashtag that first coffee is called The Answer.
The Answer.
You can buy it on our website now.
It's true. It's a three bean blend.
Very nice coffee.
Very, very tasty bean.
Positive reviews on that one so far.
How does your basket size affect your recipe? We use 20 gram VST baskets. Okay. When you're setting up a recipe, one of the things that you really need to consider the most is bed depth. Like, how deep is that bed of coffee within, like, you know, whatever surface area you have. And honestly, I like the 20 grams because you've got like a decent bed depth and you've got a lot of headroom. And by when I'm talking about headroom, I'm referring to the room in between where the tamped coffee puck is and the shower screen is.
Right.
So that when you engage the pump, you get the water filling up that empty space first and then permeating through the coffee, which I think leads to a more even extraction.
Agreed.
Less channeling. To whereas if you have like a 17 gram basket, they're the same width and you will have the same bed depth basically, but sometimes depending on how you're dosing, you might get that puck slammed up against the dispersion screen, which can lead to a little bit of channeling going on when you engage the pump because the water may not permeate through there evenly because it doesn't fill up that empty space first.
Yeah.
So just think about that, and then you won't really see a too crazy of a difference unless you use like a really weird basket or if you're trying to pull like a single. So let's say you wanted to pull like a true single espresso and use like somewhere between 10 and 14 grams of coffee.
Right.
You won't be able to do it in a 20 gram basket. Ooh. Because your coffee bed's going to be too thin and spread out.
Right.
That's why you see some of those single baskets. They have a truncated like cone shape so that where the coffee sits has a similar bed depth. It just takes up less surface area.
Yep.
So don't sweat the basket size too much if you're using pretty close to standard brewing recipes, but that's how it works. And it works the same way in a batch brewer too. So if you have, you know, like a big batch brewer and you want to brew a small, little tiny batch, you might need a different, what do they call that? A filter holder.
Yeah.
If you're way out of spec. Because you, I mean, just picture in your mind a filter with just like, you know, a tiny little quarter of an inch of coffee sprinkled across the bottom.
Right.
You're like, I'm going to brew a pour oversized cup of coffee in my batch brewer. It's not going to work.
No, it's the same thing with people who are trying to get, they talk about, it's not, but it is the same thing about people pouring latte art in foam depth in like these big latte mugs versus the small skinnier ones in competition. The people who would always, they'd use the ACF tulip cups to get more bed depth with the same amount of foam versus like the old ACF, what were those called?
Like the big bowls or whatever.
Yeah, the bowls, because you'd pour the same amount of foam, but it'd actually feel like less foam than drinking.
Right,
because
it's in a tighter area.
Yeah.
So it's
just
like,
another way to
it's deeper
it
foam, but the amount is the same.
The amount's the same.
Ooh. Next level. What's number three?
It's about how does pre-infusion affect and or the ramp up and ramp down of pressure?
We'll pre-infuse a little bit, and pre-infusion is basically, I don't really think about it as affecting the recipe so much. Pre-infusion is just kind of priming. It does have some effects Okay. We'll talk about what it does, and then we'll talk about some like side effects.
Right.
So pre-infusion is basically to saturate that whole coffee puck before you get that full pressure. And what that's going to do, it's going to just, it's kind of like the bloom phase in a pour over. It basically prevents channeling.
Yeah.
So you're kind of pre-wetting the puck to prime it for that full blast of pressure so that you get less channeling.
Right.
So just keep that in mind. That's why if you work on like an old school Linea that doesn't have a flow restrictor or anything, you see the shot drop out like right away.
4 seconds,
it's all boom, like hit the button, the water comes out, and you're prone to have a lot more channeling, all things being equal.
Yeah.
Some people disagree, but whatever, dude.
whatever, dude.
And then
I'm here, man.
Here's a couple things to note regarding flow rate and pre-infusion. Assuming you have the same grind, the same dose and everything, the longer you pre-infuse,
the faster your shot,
the more aggressive your flow rate's going to be once you kick in that full nine bars or whatever of pressure. So if you pre-infuse for 5 seconds and click it on versus pre-infuse for 2 seconds and then click it on, the one with the 5 second pre-infusion is going to have like a really accelerated flow rate.
Yeah.
Whereas if you didn't pre-infuse at all, you would actually get a slower flow rate from the extraction, which is really interesting. Yeah, there's actually a post on Barista Hustle on Facebook, Perger's little thing, where Andy Barhus.com. Andy Schechter talks about pre-infusion and water debits and all these things. And water debit is basically the rate at which water comes out of your machine when there's no coffee there, and how to set up your machine so that you get the right static flow rate of water. So go to the Barista Hustle Facebook page and type in water debit, type in pre-infusion, and Schechter's got some knowledge to just drop on you.
It was always interesting for us adjusting, because we use La Marzocco's in our cafes. And then we would go to our competitions and we'd go on the Simonelli machines, and they have a pre-infusion. It's basically set up so that we could always assume about 7-8 seconds our shots would come out for us in the way we were pulling them. But overall, our shots, based on what we were tasting on our La Marzocco's to the Simonelli's, would come out in like 3 to sometimes 5 seconds faster in an overall extraction because of that pre-infusion phase at the time. Remember, it was just so weird for us to get used to.
It's an interesting feeling when you don't see the shot drop for a long time and you're like, okay, the shot's going to be slow. But then when it comes out of the gate, it comes out
laser.
Hot. It's a boom.
And then you're like, oh no, my shot's wrong. But
then it ends up, yeah.
And I've had some of my best shots in my life off those Simonelli machines too.
I love a nice like soft infusion.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, like a nice long drop, baby,
and then just blast it out
and
through the middle.
Let's go, dude.
And I, you know what? We're gonna have volumetrics on our machine, and also a little bit of pressure something. Maybe we'll ramp it down. Who knows?
We played with ramp down a little bit, but not enough to really like tell the difference. I know Jeppy, aka John Ermakoff, likes a little tail off at the end of his shots, but I usually just chop it. You know.
I'm used to chopping at this point.
Chop that thing, and that's that. Your dial-in process actually sounds like you're on the right track, to where it's assuming that your coffee is pretty consistent.
Right.
You know, roasting-wise, and especially if you're dealing within the same batch of espresso, the best place to start is exactly where you're going. Like, come on in and use yesterday's recipe as that baseline spec, and honestly, you shouldn't be far off.
No.
You get a little bit of change with age, but not as much as people say. And I think people that are having like a really hard time dialing in and want to change it a lot are just creating more trouble than they actually need to, because they have a preconceived notion that like this has to be hard.
Right.
It's got to be different. They said like when it was older, I'd pull it a little longer, but what does that mean? And it's just
it's like 1 second or two.
It's just like a big like thing, or like I need to use more coffee when the coffee's aged, but it's not big of a deal to make really any difference.
Yep. I'm so with you on that.
So just think about that. And I think you're doing all the right stuff. You're tasting it. You keep working on that, and you are going to be in the zone, dude. So in the zone.
It's a good question.
It's a great question. I love talking about espresso. Don't you love espresso, Jared?
Because espresso is the best thing
ever. Espresso is the best thing ever, dude. Yeah, dude. Fuck.
All y'all who don't like espresso just don't have the people who you're getting it from making it right.
Straight up tripping.
Yeah, you guys are missing out.
R-E-S-P-E-C-T.
R-S-P-E-C-T.
R-C-C-P-C-T-C. Find out what it means to me, player.
You don't respect me, Eddie.
What have you done for me lately,
Eddie?
Oh, my gosh. Let's see. Oh, my gosh. My computer just died.
Oh, Chris. How are we going to do more Q&As?
I don't know. Here, let's go to this one.
Cool.
What up, and fellas?
Hi, friend.
Thanks for taking the time to read my email. So I have a friend. So my friend and I live in Atlanta and are dying to get a cafe going.
That's the ATL, you guys.
Yeah, ATLians.
That's where Outkast is from.
Luda's there, too.
That's gruesome, too. Some Jermaine Dupri.
Birdman. to start, we were thinking we might want to do a catering pop-up, some sort of deal with the GS3. We believe this would help us gain our footing and possibly build a following before we're settled into brick and mortar. With that being said, I wanted to know if you guys had a suggestion for what we should know about water to power the machine. I've seen a few rigs connected with a pump to a 5-gallon jug, but don't know if that was the best option. I saw you guys were doing a pop-up and wanted to ask what your rig was like. If you guys are even using an espresso machine, you could just be doing pour-overs for all I know. We are doing a pop-up, but our pop-up is at an established coffee shop slash bake shop, so we're plumbed in and we're ready to go.
We're basically in somebody else's coffee shop altogether.
Right. Yeah. So we have it easy in that regard.
It's not even a pop-up.
It's a pop-down. Yeah. It's a pop-in. It's more like a pop-in.
It's more like a pop-a-doc.
We're like popping in. Pop-a-doc. Pop-a-doc. He was the best freestyler in the hood, son. Pop-a-doc.
Crazy Legs is the best
B Rabbit. Me and B Rabbit. Yeah, you want to run a 5-gallon jug, and
that's the best.
That pump thing that you saw was a flow jet.
Yep.
So basically that makes sure that you get a even pressure feeding the machine pump, the espresso machine pump. So you could theoretically run a line from the pump straight into the bucket, but you would risk kind of burning out the pump on your machine early. So buy a flow jet. You can probably get one on Amazon for pretty cheap. Not that much money, under $100, I think, for sure.
Yeah, you can pull it off.
And you get a big old 5-gallon jug and a bunch of water and just throw that thing in there. I think the pop-up's a cool idea.
I think it's a smart idea, especially if you're testing your marketplace. I would suggest doing it somewhere near the area that you want to open up because you're trying to drive customers. And from my experience in ATL, nothing is really close together. So find your neighborhood and start popping up around there.
Yeah, and look at your numbers, too. Treat the pop-up as your business, because it really is. So I know, like, a lot of people do a pop-up and they're like, oh yeah, I'm just popping up, and they don't track waste and they don't track inventory and they don't track usage. You want to build a spreadsheet and track all of those things. Shout out to Chuck Jack. you heard it from Chuck.
Your pop-up is ultimately your opportunity to practice your business and do your market research, and all you're doing is trying to improve day in and day out, less waste, more sales. Find out what the people want, find out what will sell, and find out what you're going to be able to just dominate and improve on and sell more of in your cafe, and be planning ahead on those operations because it's going to get real for you. You know what I'm saying? I know what you're saying. You know what, folks? Chris and I were talking a lot, and we talked about following up on that time management and all that episode. I think we're going to do that next week because it's time. I had a good conversation with Lee Safar of Elixir this morning.
Lee Safar.
Yeah, and she listened to that episode where we started to talk about our morning routines.
Oh yeah.
And she was impressed that our first thing is getting up and taking care of our mental and spiritual health to get going. And anyway, Chris and I have been talking a lot about doing a whole episode based on just like getting ready, planning out your day, trying to schedule out how to be effective with your life. And so in the next episode or two, get ready for that. And any more announcements before we kick this thing out to the people?
Things are kind of moving on the building a little bit more than they have in the past couple weeks.
Yeah, we got a lot of fun stuff going on at the building right now. We got our doors just went in. Our barn door is in the front, which is pretty exciting.
Back door's going in. The roll-up doors are apparently here but not there.
You know what I'm saying?
They're in, but they're not.
They're in and or around.
They had a little backhoe over there digging up the asphalt.
Oh yeah, it's
to put
down
in planter beds for trees and digging out for the ramp that leads up to the back door and the ramp that leads up to the side door.
It's pretty fun out there right now.
It's pretty wild.
We got our subscriptions to the Kickstarter donated. Those have started. So keep your eyes peeled, all you Kickstarter donators.
And if you donated on the signature on the machine level, we're going to be reaching out soon to get your signatures to do. So what we're going to do is we'll have everybody sign their name on like a white piece of paper with a Sharpie, and I'll take that and dump it into Illustrator, and we got a pattern that we're working on that we're going to wrap the machine in. So we
work on them signatures.
We didn't forget about you. Yeah. If you're listening, you want to make that thing look hot.
Start practicing.
And with the number of signatures we got, there's a pretty good chance that it looks like your signature will pop up more than once on our machine. So just make it look proper. Okay.
Yeah. We got like 20 to 30, but it's going to be a repetitor.
We switched our roasting from every other week to every week. We roast every week since we started doing the pop-up at Companion Bake Shop, which has been great. So that kind of forced us into roasting every week. And when I say forced us, it's not that we don't like to do it, but it's a little bit of a journey. Shout out to Vertigo Coffee Roasters. They let us roast on their roaster in San Juan Bautista, which is about 45-minute drive from where we're at.
Yep. So we transport all of our coffee in an old Subaru Outback and head over and roast all day with all our packaging and our printers and everything. It's a big operation.
The drive is easy, but then we go to the space. We go to Cat and Cloud, load up green. So we've got, 600 pounds of green in the back of this car that's just like dipping hard. We got label printers, regular printers, bags. Mailing bags,
Tampers,
hats, merch, basically everything you need to run an operation. And then we go set that up in someone else's place.
Roast.
The roasting is like the easiest part of the whole thing.
It's the therapeutic part.
Yeah. And then the setup
and the
just takes a while. Yeah. The people there, they're super cool.
And Chuck's loves the pizza. They do a wood fired pizza out there. If you guys haven't been
Chuck eats a pizza actually, every time.
You guys really are missing out. Their pizza game out there is hot. They have beer on tap. Coffee's good. They roast their own as well. It's a fun little spot.
They're having a throwdown.
August.
I think it's August 12th.
Is it 12 or 7?
Let me get the exact date right now. We were not sure. Jared and I were like, 12th? 7th? Who knows? Okay. I'm on the Instagram.
Gosh, you guys, Instagram. You heard of it?
I'm not seeing what I need to see.
Okay.
We're going to circle back.
It'll happen.
I want to give them a shout out.
It'll happen. So, yeah, anyways, we've been heading out there every week. And then we put the Answer, which is our flagship coffee. It's good for everything. We use it for our espresso and milk. We use it for our house coffee. It's a freaking happy blend. It's three beans, and it's an Ethiopian coffee, a Brazilian coffee, and a Colombian coffee. And we are having a really fun time with it. Really sweet, really, really balanced. And we're trying to make it be that cup of coffee that you don't have to think about, but you really enjoy. Or if you are the type who just wants to really break it down and be like, I can taste what's happening from the Ethiopian coffee. I can really taste that Colombian sweetness. And you talk like that to yourself, then it's for you as well.
Yeah, it's really, really good. Yeah, I really, really like it. August 12th is the Vertigo Throwdown.
Cool.
So if you're in the Bay Area, maybe you're in San Jose, maybe you're in Sucker Free City, if you want to drive down, you should come on through. Even
come
if you're down
through.
South, come on up.
Nice. And if you guys have any more questions or anything for us, info@catandcloud.com. Again, come mid next month, we are going to be hiring. We're looking for some ladies and gentlemen. Ladies, don't be afraid to email us. I know we're loud and intense, but we've been getting a lot of applications from dudes. And if you're interested in working for a company like us, holla.
Holla.
And I'm not talking about that bread I love so much.
I need to, I don't know if he listens, but I need to shout out to Gregory Jones, who ordered coffee and wanted stickers. And I told him I would send him a button instead because we don't have stickers. And Gregory, we were all out of buttons. I'm so sorry.
Gregory.
So you're going to get coffee at your house, but it won't have a button with it. I'm so sorry.
You'll get coffee and a public apology.
My shout out to you.
Is that enough? Is that enough for you, Greg?
Choose.
Well, guys, thank you so much for tuning in. And as always, it's been a pleasure. Keep it so real. And we can't wait to talk to you about time management.
What a lame finish. We can't wait to talk to you about a limited once-in-a-lifetime offer that could improve your lifestyle while simultaneously making you more attractive to aliens. All right, y'all. This has been the Cat and Cloud Coffee Podcast. We are going to go do some other stuff right now. Thanks for taking the time to listen to us. Shout out to Calafia Farms for making awesome milk alternatives. And we'll catch you on the flip-flop.
Flip-flop.
Peace.